Hey guys, welcome to episode 261 of the podcast with my soul sister, Jenny Jaffe. I hope you enjoy this episode. Listen, we get deep into some mental illness shit. Oh yeah, I tried to make that sound really fun for everyone. Listen, this is what happens on my podcast. We get raw, especially when there's stuff that we both relate to on kind of an amazing level. So I hope you enjoy the episode. I think she's quite something and quite wonderful. I'm a little behind on shout outs, but I do want to alert people that IFC will be releasing a sneak peek, first episode, I think, of Stand Against Evil. I say I think because I'm not totally sure if they're doing an episode out of order just for fun or if they're doing the first episode of the season. But either way, you will get a sneak peek full episode of Stand Against Evil on Friday the 13th. Fitting. It's fitting. And you'll be able to get it on IFC.com. And I think that's sort of one of the main platforms that you'll just be able to watch it during that day. And if you get a chance to and you can and you want to tweet about it, you know what? It would make me look so good to my bosses at IFC. I am so proud of our second season. It's so goofy. It's so goofy. Even if you're not a fan of horror stuff and you just like to laugh. Like if you like The Simpsons, that's what it reminds me of. It's like live action Simpsons craziness. So definitely check that out. That's kind of the main thing I want to tell you about other than other Stand Against Evil stuff that's in my mind, which is that our series starts premiering regularly on November 1st. So that's it for now. Enjoy the episode and I'll talk to you soon.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
I've said it before, I'll say it again. The embarrassment of loving your podcast. Like, I love my podcast as if it's my child.
That's so beautiful.
But principally because... But then, like, it feels immediately weird to be like, stop. Stop having a meaningful conversation with me, human to human. I need to turn on the recorder so right. Other people can hear it. That's a weird breaking point.
Right. Well, when I first moved out here, I had the honest thought of like, I should have a podcast just so I can meet friends.
Yeah.
And then I was like,
listen, it works.
But would I have to like put it out there? Or would like this fake like podcast that's like, oh yeah, we're rolling. What are your hobbies?
As there's just a blank, dusty computer in front of you.
Yeah.
Please don't look. Please don't. Please stay on your side of the...
Plugged into a potato. Yeah, it's very high tech.
Chemistry.
Right.
If you told me right now, Janet, you don't know this, and I don't even think of myself as that gullible, right. But if you said, no, you didn't do that in school, like, do you know that a potato has like a strange amount of electricity to it, where like, I mean, yes, it only works for about 30 seconds, but you can definitely plug in a piece of electronics and it will work.
Wait, can you actually? No, but see, now I'm like, I was so bad. Well, are we recording?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Okay, so I failed, I don't know, I failed biology. I think I failed chemistry too. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm really bad at math and science.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. Let's just separate. Let's tease this out.
Right.
Let's tease them apart for a second. Bad at or not interested in and therefore bad at?
Bad at. And like, I think...
Because I had no enthusiasm. Like, the enthusiasm for math was absent. So, wanting to do well has a tremendous amount to do with how well you do. But I liked the sciences and it was more of a struggle for me. But at least I had like... mine also had like a huge crush on my teacher. So it really helped.
I had that freshman year of math.
It really helps.
Yeah. It was the
you
like,
do
only
a great
math
job.
Class I did great in.
You pay attention.
Sit in the front of the room. Sit absolutely. The yeah. I think he lives in LA now with
Let's
his like
track
wife
him
and
down.
Kid. Let's do it. We'll get him on here. That'd
do you
be
feel
great.
Like the crush would sustain? How long has it been since you've seen this man?
It was in freshman year of high school. So that's 13 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I probably not.
I've told
this
story. I did tell the story once, I think, on my podcast. Possibly I've referred to it more than once because it was a meaningful moment for me. But my dad had a party probably 10 years ago. And like, this is not something my dad has ever done before or since. But he was just like, you know what? Let's have like, I'm shimmering my shoulders like he's like a gay man. But yeah. He was like, let's have an open house. Let's, you're home. You're home in Tucson. It's been long enough that you're, like, a bunch of my friends haven't seen you for. They always ask about you. I think I had like recently gone on television for the first time. So he was very proud.
Oh, that's
and he
really
was like,
cute.
I'm just going to invite. And so it wasn't about inviting any of my friends. It was about my dad's friends come over and like poke at you.
Totally.
One of them for sure said, you're much thinner than you look on television.
Oh, gosh.
Which is like, my dad is, I'm from a, he's a public school teacher. There's nothing, but that sound, doesn't that sound so bougie for someone to say?
It's a very, it was it's a real very shock. Hollywood thing for somebody
I was like,
to say.
Oh, Tucson, Arizona, what's happened? But he invited that teacher and I opened the front door and I hadn't seen him in a decade or whatever. And I opened the front door and I was like, still got it. Yep. Totally still have a huge crush on you. And now the age difference seems super small, but you're also married and have a child.
I had that with a college professor that, like, obviously nothing happened, but I always, like, kind of had a crush on him. And then I ran into him at, like, an alumni event and I still got all, like, nervous.
That's great.
And
it was the flutters. You got the flutters.
It was good. I feel
okay,
like
so
I'm,
you had, so you fit, but, but you. And so did you have enthusiasm for the sciences, but just not be able to kind of put the pieces together? Or was it more of a
theory? I think I'm, first of all, I'm being very careful about breathing into the microphone because I'm getting over like a sinus infection. I have this feeling that I'm going to be like snorfling like into it's going to be disgusting. Like, like, I just don't want to do that.
You don't sound congested at all. I feel like when I sound like a foghorn when
I've definitely been snoring and I definitely feel like it's just occasional disgusting noises that like lurch forward from my mouth.
I welcome a snorful.
Oh, good. Okay.
Welcome it.
That's another podcast just called Snorfling with Janet and Jenny. I don't think I had enthusiasm for it because I think I was so focused on English. Well, I think there were two things. And one of the reasons is depressing. I think I was just really focused on the arts and was from a really young age. And then the other thing is that and I don't know how much you want to get into this, but I've been very open about it with my nonprofit and that kind of thing. But I was severely depressed and really dealing with some debilitating OCD through most of high school.
Mm-hmm.
So I was kind of in and out of school a lot. I didn't really have a lot of attention to give to academic things at all, like, because I was just trying to like stay alive. So the things like math and science where I'm not naturally interested or good at them kind of fell by the wayside. But I was really lucky because I had at least one math teacher who was amazing, and she would like stay with me after school to like try and help me get the concepts. And she basically said, if I see you doing the work, I won't let you fail this class, because she knew I was like trying. I think I had gotten into Tisch at that point. She was like, I know you're not doing this professionally. I don't want to make it so you can't go to
your she wasn't going to be the bulldog like, teacher who's like, we'll see about Tisch.
No, she was amazing.
Yeah.
So.
And so that puts us in the frame of where was this? Did you grow up so that you would be going to Tisch down the street, or was it a big deal that you were
leaving to go to Tisch? I went to school in the Bay Area. It's called Menlo. I went to school. It's like South Bay Area.
Menlo Park?
Or is it not? It's in Atherton, actually, but it's called Menlo.
Gotcha.
And so it's right like on the border, I guess.
Yeah, I have relatives who live in Redwood City, but my first time ever to the Bay Area, I stayed with my friend's sister who had an apartment in Menlo Park. So that was my first place I ever lay down my head.
Oh, that's so nice. Yeah. That's exactly the area where I grew up. And so it was a very preppy school. It was a very sports focused school. So for me to decide that I wanted to go to Tisch was not something that was really in the purview of anybody I knew. And like, my family's not in the arts.
How big is your family? Is it you have brothers and sisters?
Just one sister. She's currently at USC, so I get to see her all the time. Yeah, she's getting her master's in video game design.
Oh, wow. That's so great. How exciting.
I'm really proud of her.
No kidding.
Just her and then my parents and grandparents and everybody else was sort of like Jews in medicine. Like, that's my background. Everybody was doctors and therapists. So it's not – my mom's a social worker, like – it's nobody sort of had any clue of like, okay, Jenny wants to go into the arts. What the hell does that mean? So I sort of decided pretty early though that I wanted to go to New York. I think I just had this sort of like pull, and like like my parents took me to New York a bunch of times because it's where my mom's family's from, and every time I went I was like, I'm home, like this is it, from a really young age.
And that's
like,
how I felt when I went to San Francisco.
Francisco's a really cool city. Yeah, too. That's, yeah,
but if I were from that area, where are you from? Knows where I thought. I'm from Arizona.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Oh cool. Oh right, duh, you just said that. Oh, I'm
no,
so
no, no,
sorry.
No, no, please, we're all over the place.
I completely failed my reading comprehension. Oh, I will on, the ACT,
I mean there's
so.
I have to use like that's a, to your point earlier about making friends on the podcast, like thank God I do stuff like this because somehow it does record in my brain a little bit more than it would just out in life.
Right.
But I have to usually be told, because it's contextual too, right? Someone will tell you where they're from and then there's no reason for that to really stick unless there's some crazy story behind it. And then, you know, a year later you say, and you're like, oh wait, where are you from? Like there's no, you know what I mean? So those foundational things, unless somebody talks about it all the time, like they constantly talk about where they're from, I don't know that cements for anybody.
I think Seattle people always talk about how they're from Seattle. and
people who went to Brown always talk about how they went to Brown.
Absolutely. So those are, so you know those people. And then if somebody's from Hawaii or Alaska.
Also a good point. Yeah. Also a good point. Yeah.
Canadians too. Sometimes they sneak up on you and you like, you forget it until they're like, don't even remember like that weird show we all watched called
Degrassi.
Oh, well, I love Degrassi.
Oh, was that on for you?
Degrassi, The Next Generation.
Okay.
Was on
I missed all of that, even though it was on when I was younger. I don't think it was on. I feel like it was not on in a place I could see it. But maybe
it's all on Netflix, and it's a really good binge watch.
Is it?
Yeah.
Degrassi. It's not like Fame, is it? It's like a regular high school?
No, it's like a regular high school with like an unregular amount of drama. Like,
sounds right.
Like, it's like this weird high school where everybody is just like very, very traumatized.
Okay.
That's what Degrassi is.
Which is exactly what young people want to feel like is relatable and stuff. I feel like my high school had a fair amount of drama, and I do want to get into your drama as well. That shit's real.
So real.
God knows I've went through some weird stuff in high school and college, and people have done the podcast who lost family members, you know, during that point in their lives. How did that, when did that start manifesting for you?
It started manifesting pretty much from like the second I was born. I've just always been this super anxious kid. And then the first time I was like suicidal, I was about 10.
Oh,
and I didn't even know.
Sweet Jenny.
No, it's real sad to talk. It's real sad to talk about, but, I was lucky again. I had a lot of people in the mental health world in my family. And so they helped me find a therapist and, sort of helped me get treatment from a really young age. And then around the time, it abated for a while. Mm-hmm. It got better. And then I was bullied really badly in middle school.
Doesn't
because
help.
Everybody is. I think also like kids can sort of sniff out like who's nervous.
Oh, sure.
Like girls are amazing at this.
Yeah.
And then I, in high school, so around like age 15 or so, I just started having these horrible OCD symptoms, and it wasn't really clear that that's what it was at first. I developed a really clear panic disorder. So I started having these like daily panic attacks. And then because of all that, or like ancillary to that, I started getting really depressed because I was like, if I have to keep living in this brain every day, I don't want to keep doing it.
I've been there.
Yeah, it's like it makes me feel better in my adult life. Like all the coolest people I meet. No,
look, I'm already tearing up because like when I started having panic attacks, I was 18, and when I think about how little I was able to handle it then, and then I subtract years off of that, and imagine that happening to little you, it just breaks my heart.
It was it's funny because like it wasn't something I even thought about as being sad for that age until I got older. I think just because I was sort of soldiering through it.
Of course, but that was your reality. That was whatever, you know. It doesn't mean you knew it as normal. It doesn't mean at the time you were like, this is cool, this is normal, but it was your reality. It was the only one you had.
So I was really lucky. I had a ton of family support around it, but the community I grew up in wasn't one that really knew how to deal with things like that. And still, it's getting better, actually. And I have gotten to be sort of a part of like figuring out how to help that community.
Nice.
Just because I think it is a very image conscious Silicon Valley. It's like a very like high achieving people, and everybody's sort of trying to like prove to each other like I'm doing great. And it's hard to be in that and feel like something's wrong. Like, why can't I just feel like everybody else? So
sure.
And so high school was really tough for me, and a lot of it's a little bit of a blur, but my sort of happy place was theater and British comedy. I like all those years that I sort of spent in bed. I just watched a ton of, I just consumed everything, and it was sort of my comedy education.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't, like, it's funny because I felt like I was playing social catch up when I got to college, just because I really hadn't, you know, dated or anything like that mm-hmm. in high school. But I had done a lot of watching like old 80s British shows and that sort of thing.
Like Blackadder.
Blackadder.
And
sixth grade, I was gifted Blackadder as a DVD box set by an Australian family friend. And watched the whole thing, and at the end I swear to God I just turned it off, and I was like, I'm gonna write TV. That's what I'm awesome. Gonna do. I anything that Fry and Laurie or Rowan Atkinson have been involved in, I've watched and like studied at their feet.
That's so cool.
So that sort of was like,
was that another thing that aside from the Australian family friend who gave it to you, like you were looking around for someone to be like, hey guys, am I right? Or did you have people who were like, I mean, Monty Python is sort of the biggest British crossover of friends of mine when I was in high school. They had discovered Monty Python and kind of could have conversations about that. But
not really, but I had a live journal.
Oh,
and
nice.
I was really into like my little online like comedy community.
Sure.
A couple of people I ended up sort of crossing paths with later in life, like one of them being like, did you used to have this? I'm like, yes. And we are going to just pretend we haven't read about each other crying about guys at play practice. I was very into British comedy and I was very into musicals. And those were two things that sort of none of the people in my life were that into. So it was a lot of me roping people into it. My little sister got roped into watching, a bunch of TV shows, and my friend Britt, who isn't a big musicals fan, we're still really close, like to her credit, like really put up with me being like, you gotta listen to this thing, or or like when I discovered the Mighty Boosh, and anybody who I could get to sit down and watch, I was like, you have to watch this thing.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, I mean, because so Facebook came out when I was like 16, I guess. And so social media and like YouTube started like happening kind of in middle to end of high school for me.
Mm-hmm.
And that really changes everything just about really how people consume and look at things. Cause I was in my sort of own little incubator, and Strangers of Candy was the other thing.
Oh, that sure.
Was like blowing my mind. And that was on after school for me.
Uh-huh.
So it was like, but that was all sort of like in response to this feeling of wanting to escape my own head so badly.
What, do you mind if I ask what the OCD symptoms were?
Oh,
like?
Sure. I'm like an open book about this because I spent so much time just doing work in this space. But so people like really think of OCD as just being about cleanliness and hand washing, and it's those things.
Well, we all have a sort of a crib sheet of like anything we haven't personally experienced. Like people think Tourette's is a certain thing. People think OCD is a certain thing. People think, you know what I mean? Like schizophrenia is a certain thing. We sort of have these like little bubbles in our head. They're like, that's what that is. I guess that's what that is. And
totally
somehow
exactly.
Sometimes and often much more nuanced than that.
Well, it's. So I had all of that, and I had all of the like, I'm still hyper organized, and I still don't love germs. Who does? Nobody's like a big fan. But the other part that people don't talk about as much, that you have these intrusive thoughts, and that's sort of the thing that makes you want to do the ritualizing, is you get an intrusive thought and then you feel like you have to do something in response to it. And the intrusive thoughts, unfortunately, are really disturbing. And like, a lot of people I've talked to now with OCD have kind of corroborated what I was feeling, which is like, I must be a psychopath. Like, I'm a serial killer and I'm a bad person, and like, I don't know what's happening. And it was so upsetting being in my own brain. And then I was also deathly afraid of getting sick and throwing up. Mm-hmm. Like, deathly afraid of it. I wrote an article that sort of like started Project You Are Okay in a weird way, which was about my experience in exposure therapy for my fear of vomit, which is more common than I thought it was.
It's very common. People who don't feel that they have anything else wrong with them have phobias about vomiting.
Yeah. Which I had no idea, I remember, like, I was just terrified all the time. I tested my temperature obsessively. I would have to do that multiple times a day. And I, like, just wouldn't touch things other people had touched. And it was just not...
It's so exhausting.
It was so exhausting.
It's so exhausting.
It was just exhausting to wake up. And there's a lot I really don't remember, which is interesting.
Were you being put on and taken off medications and stuff?
I spent a nice blur of high school, like, trying different meds, and some of them I'm still on medication, but now it's like it works for me.
Sure.
And it doesn't disrupt my life, but I was on at least one or two where I just felt like I was like removed from my own life, mm-hmm. which, and I don't want to scare people off medication, because I think
no, but it is, it's also like, it's okay to need to be medicated. It's okay to know that that is that testing process is maybe something to get through, but right. not, but like, be very present to those symptoms and be right. have someone you trust that you can communicate that
and
stuff
to. And it's also
too.
A piece of a bigger process. Like, yes. I don't think you can use it as a cure-all. It has to be like part of an ongoing
agreed
treatment
yeah.
plan of some kind.
Yeah.
And you know, it's hard because the way our world is structured now, I think we don't have, not enough people have access to mental health care
that's
comprehensive. So I just got really lucky, and even under like the ideal circumstances of having a family that could support me emotionally and financially, and in that, it was still just hell.
Yeah.
So I mean anything I can do over the course of my life to help make that not be the case for other kids. But Project You Are Okay was sort of just the nonprofit I started a couple years ago that is basically my way of reaching back to me in high school and telling myself it's okay, because that's the one thing I wanted. And the thing that really helped me, actually, because I didn't know it was OCD until I got diagnosed. And I looked at a checklist and I was like, oh my God, how did this person read my thoughts? And it's so...
This is me. Anybody who listens to my podcast with regularity knows that you are saying the same thing.
Oh, really?
About what I had, because I had something that was so weird. I thought I was crazy.
What did you have? Do you mind?
Well, my anxiety manifested in something that the big book calls depersonalization displacement syndrome.
Ow. Hold on, because that came later for me.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Yeah.
Give
so
me
that
a high
was
five.
My big... It's fucking awful.
It's the worst feeling.
It's awful.
Yeah, it's absolutely one of the worst feelings. And for some reason, I avoided it until I was like 22.
Mm-hmm.
We got to talk about all this, because mm-hmm. that's crazy. That's my least favorite of all the symptoms, probably.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, it's just a nightmare. Mm-hmm. And it very much felt like how some of the meds made me feel.
Yeah,
it's that
totally.
Feeling of being...
It feels like you're on drugs.
Right.
Or I used to, like, when people who'd never taken drugs didn't know, I would be like, you know when you have a really bad fever?
Yeah.
And you feel like you're living in alternate reality, like you're in another dimension, but you can see everything that's going on, and you know how to move your mouth, but you're very aware, and it feels like you're moving someone else's mouth.
It's like
when Being John Malkovich came out, I was like, oh my God, is that what's happening to me?
That's totally... Yeah, that's exactly... That's exactly what it feels like.
Yeah.
We're too smart. So interesting.
We're too smart.
Is that our brains, the problem?
Our brains have the capability of being like, I can do all of these regular things that other people do, and I can also freak out about doing them. I have time to freak out about everything that's happening. Like, I have time to just process and analyze and wonder and worry. And
I really spend so much time now, like, making sure, because I think I do have the tendency to fill up my life with just a ton of things because I'm really afraid of stopping and I'm really afraid of being alone in my head, and I'm trying to get better at it. Mm-hmm. And New York was a place I think I loved in part because it's so loud, you can't listen to yourself. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, if you're living in an apartment in New York, you're not alone.
You're
in
never
the same
alone.
Way that you're alone in like a remote country home.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And I think that's what I was kind of trying to just keep that. But you burn out after a while, yeah. too. But so I heard Maria Bamford do a set about... It was one of her like first albums that I got. And I was just listening to a ton of stand-up at the time. And her thing about, if I clench my fists at odd intervals, I won't turn gay. I was like... Oh my God, it's not just me.
Yeah.
And of course, later in life, I realized some of the things I thought were like intrusive thoughts about women were actually me being queer, which was another whole thing I had to kind of contend with. But that thought, that in particular, I just held on to that. I was like, there's this cool stand up. She seems like her life is, she's doing a lot of cool things with her life that I would like to do with my life. If she's doing it, maybe I can too. And I looked at her and at Stephen Colbert and at Robin Williams and Stephen Fry and a lot of other people. And I was just sort of like, okay, like they're not dead and they're not doing, well, not dead at the time,
sure,
in the case of Robin Williams, but, and they're not doing, they're doing more with their life than just sitting in their parents' house. So that is a possibility, and that mm-hmm. was so huge.
Sure.
Like, that was the most comforting thing I could think of.
Absolutely.
So yeah.
Were you the plays that, just to go, and also I want to hear more about Project You're Okay so that people can really get the gist of the nuts and bolts of it rather
totally,
than just I'm only allowing it to be this like ephemeral idea right now, and I want people to hear
totally
more
okay,
about it.
Yeah.
But and this is a total like little sideways trip, but I was thinking about your appreciation of British comedy and stuff, and when you were doing stuff, when you were in able to kind of check in with some elements of high school and you were excited about theater, were you doing things that scratch that itch, or was it like, well, this is close enough, it is acting and performing and stuff, or but was it like plays where you're like, well
I did there, I think I would have just done anything. Like, I loved the feeling of being in theater and being like play practice. I took it so seriously.
Love it.
It's rehearsal, mom. It's a cast recording, mom. It's a sketch. It's not a skit. Like, I was
sure.
And at some point I'm like, God, I was just an asshole. But my school didn't have an improv team or anything like that. And I tried to start one at one point. It went poorly. But then we did like a sort of unit on improv. And it was all sort of short form improv, but I just loved it so much. And it was like maybe my happiest high school memory, because when you're in a group like that, you're sort of bonding with people. And I felt a little removed from people because I wasn't very honest about what I was going through because I was embarrassed. So doing things like that were really helpful and helped me feel like I had a place. And I used to spend a lot of time in the drama room and just putting on like special effects makeup on myself. And
nice. I love that you guys had a budget for that, man. When I was in high school, my drama department was like,
oh, we didn't.
We just had a couple of closets that had, I don't even remember. I mean, I'm sure we must have had stage makeup at some point when we were doing the shows, but did we?
We didn't. It was, I think, honestly, most of it came in from home, from the awesome drama teacher.
Yeah.
My school just didn't put a huge importance on theater. It was very, like, we had a great water polo team. Like, that was the school I went to.
Sure.
But I think now they've actually, it's maybe gotten a little bit more into the arts, because we didn't even have our own auditorium at the time. There was a college that we used their auditorium. Mm. And I think now there's their own. But I got to do, I sort of dropped out of doing plays and stuff for a while just because I tried doing chorus and I was having these panic attacks on stage. And it was, I just remember that being a nightmare.
Well, that's a, yeah. I mean, I still have that yeah. sometimes. If I'm going through, like, if I'm overtired or I haven't eaten, like, those, you find out what your triggers are, so to speak. Right. And, but, you know, every once in a while, like, I remember it happened at the Thrilling Adventure Hour for me a couple of years ago for whatever reason. I think I, like, was on a weird schedule because I had been shooting or whatever, and I was on stage, and I think I hadn't eaten enough, and I just suddenly, like, had a panic attack, and it was... Again, it's like, it's so crazy because you can still, I was still reading words off the page, but I was broken out into a sweat.
Yeah.
And every part of me wanted to leave the stage and I knew I couldn't and I didn't. But, you know, it was like, right. I remember I was holding on to Mark Evan Jackson so tightly. And afterwards, he was like, oh, that was so fun. That was so great. And I was like, I hope I didn't squeeze you too tight. I had a panic attack and your physical presence was like my anchor to the world. So thank you for letting, he was like, oh my God, I had no idea. Like, what could I have done different? Like, no. That was it. That's all I needed. I needed a human person who wasn't me in my head yeah. to anchor me to the ground, you know.
I've had that exact experience, and it's also like, you, there's nothing to do, you gotta keep doing it.
Yeah.
And I, most of the time I take an Ativan before I go on stage mm-hmm. because then I sort of am like, I cannot physically have a panic mm-hmm. attack now, and that just gives me the comfort to do it.
But, oh yeah, I totally carry like beta blockers, like yeah. if nothing else I could always, it's just like put one in my mouth blanket. It is yeah. a safety blanket.
And I like almost, I don't even use it that much anymore, but same. It's so good to know it's there.
Mm-hmm.
And I've definitely had that experience on stage. And I did this musical called Bat Boy my senior year. Mm-hmm. And I was, I played one of the leads, and I was very, very proud of myself. And during one of the performances, the night they happened to be filming, I fell off the stage.
Oh, fuck.
And I hit my head of the chair. You can still kind of feel it. One of the chair armrests going down. And I got a concussion, but my like big song was next. So I got back up and I did it. But in the video, you can see my head is like starting to swell.
No.
And like my hair is coming out.
No.
And I ran outside and I like threw up.
I bet.
It was horrible
because your adrenaline saved you through that song, and but then it was like,
but you can see me like leaning on, because I was so honey. dizzy, you could see me leaning on the other person, the screen,
oh,
the
God,
scene, because I was like, I'm gonna fall over.
I feel
it
you.
It was such a nightmare. It was still less bad than having a panic attack
totally
on stage.
But there's a reason for it,
right?
It's a physical reason. I fell off the stage and I hit my head, that's why this is happening.
Anytime there's a reason that you're panicking, I feel so much better. Mm-hmm. Like I almost do better in like an emergency or in a, because I'm like, same. Oh, there's like a thing.
Whenever something big happens, it's not like I wish it on the world, but I'm so glad I'm not the only one. Like, I don't want it to have happened, but it already has happened. So I'm like, everyone's going through this with me. Oh my God, we're all in this together. I'm a normal person right now in my panic.
Since like November 8th, 2016, I've sort of been like looking around at everybody who's like, oh my God, we're all going to die, and having like all this existential dread. And I'm like, yeah, I know. Like, but it's kind of nice because I get to be like, oh, come on in.
Guess what?
Take a seat.
We can survive this. Yeah. God knows I have. Like, we can survive this.
Yeah. But it's very, it is interesting just that, like, that was so, having a panic attack on stage is like the most awful
mm-hmm.
thing.
Yeah. Because it's, and I don't want to dwell on this too far because I want to get back to a project here, okay? And I want to ask you about crushes that you had and all things queer. But if someone said, like, what's your least favorite feeling? I'm like, oh, dread.
Right.
100% dread. Because that's like, it's not just like, I can be anxious and I can be afraid, but that's not a panic attack. The panic attack comes with the dread.
Right.
And dread is like your brain, like it feels so real, and it feels like your brain knows what's up. And it's like, well, this is how you'll feel forever. And also life isn't worth living. And also, isn't this just the darkest place that could possibly take you? And somehow that feels real, opposed to being able to be like, this is going to pass. Like there's like a permanence to the temporary feeling of dread that is like, real insidious.
If you've ever taken like a bad edible, it's the same feeling, which is why I don't take edibles.
100%. But, well, my stuff started when I smoked pot on one occasion.
We need to talk. This is so crazy. Soul sisters forever,
amen. Yeah.
I've actually not talked to somebody that the exact same thing happened. That's so crazy. But yeah, to me, it's like appreciating how wonderful it is to be sober and like grounded in where you are and like feeling like things are real is so huge. Mm-hmm. That's such an amazing.
I'll tell you what, I have come so far around that I am in a place now where I'm just starting to get to a point where I'm like, you know what? I think I'm like I almost am okay with not being sober at times. And that feels like a tremendous victory to me.
We should have like a very cautious.
Dude, I just got there. You don't even know.
Okay, amazing.
Dude, within the last two months, maybe less, I just started letting my boyfriend blow a tiny bit of pot into my mouth. And I just go like this. Okay, that's enough. I'm fine. That's enough.
Oh my God.
And I'm just gradually like the exact same thing.
Really? And my boyfriend is really sweet about
it. Oh my God. We're going to have a weird pot party where they get really high and you and I are like, I think I'm just imagining it because I didn't smoke
are we high? Is this high now? Are we high?
But if you're like me, what will happen is if one of us even starts to go, the other person will immediately turn into the savior. Like if I start to feel weird, but I'm not saying anything, and then you go, I feel kind of weird, I'm going to be like, you feel fine. Like it will totally bring me back.
I can't
to like
a safe place. So funny. Yeah.
Guys, we just met. Let me just be clear about this. This is not one of my like longtime friends.
We just met like a couple minutes ago. It's so nice to meet you.
It's so nice to meet you.
This is so cool.
To Betsy.
That's so funny. But yeah, so I didn't do any drugs in high school either. Like
I did them all, and that's why.
Oh, really?
That's probably. Well, but then for me, it started later. So that's why I was like, but wait, didn't I already figure out I could do this? Why is this a thing?
Well, I think it's like there's something about your metabolism when you're.
Yeah. But if you were medicated also, I wasn't medicated. And then the second I started getting medicated, that's the only medication I wanted anywhere near me.
Right.
I didn't want to drink or, you know.
I was like medicated and we were like playing with it all the time. So it was like, I just really couldn't. And also
don't throw another variable into that mix.
Who would I have gotten drunk with? Like, who would have I?
No.
I was like a really good kid because I was like, I can't do anything. Yeah. And also like.
And you were never sent to like, because I remember when I had friends who were hospitalized and I had never got that far down the road. But I remember seeing Girl Interrupted and be like, I don't know why that's not me. Why was I not sent to it? How did I avoid that experience?
I was not, but I didn't realize how close I came because I think the only reason I wasn't is because there were mental health professionals in my family
nearby.
Who were watching
me. Yeah.
Like, I also didn't realize until like college that I had been on suicide watch because like my sister at one point, my mom was like going to the store. My sister I was like home from college. My sister looked at her like, should I stay? And I was like, no, I'm like an adult. It's fine. And Brooke was like sort of hesitant. Mm. And I didn't realize like, oh, right. They never left me alone.
Yeah.
It's interesting whenever you sort of look back and you're like, there were all these things in place that were like saving my life. I'm really lucky to be here. And I think I have a lot of energy and enthusiasm for things now because it's like, this borrowed time. Let's do it.
I totally get that. So, okay. So tell me more about Project You're Okay a couple of years ago. What does it entail and all that good stuff?
So Project You're Okay, I took like 2 years just out of writing and comedy and everything. And I was like, what else is important to me? What do I want to put in the world? And I started this nonprofit that does digital content for teens and young adults who are struggling with mental illness. So
this is amazing. I'm so excited about it.
So it's, there's a ton of videos. It's, on the site and, it became this, resource that was not only supposed to be like comforting, but also help kids find resources near them. And we did a lot of we were like really clear. We're not mental health professionals, but it was a lot of like kids would reach out to me on Twitter or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I would figure out where they are and give them the name of somebody they could call near them or something like that. And, last summer, I sold it to the Child Mind Institute in New York, and they're sort of running it now. So
great.
It's more of a formal mental health organization, but it's gotten
Is that a relief a little bit? Was it nice to have a bunch of people that could just go, you know what, we got this.
Yeah, well, I was just, it was, I mean, it's so, it was so tough because I didn't really know what I was doing. I just knew that I wanted this thing to exist. And then it got bigger than I sort of expected. And I was like, okay, let's figure out how we do this. And I knew it wasn't what I wanted to do long term. And I'm a very, I was always like very focused towards writing and performing full time. And I just kind of lucked out that an opportunity presented itself to get back into the world of TV writing right around the same time that Project You're Okay was getting acquired. And that kind of allowed me to step away. And I still want to be involved. And I have nothing but respect for people who work in nonprofits.
Sure.
And in mental health, especially full time. But I was like, this isn't good for my mental health to be spending this much time with teens who thought like I did. I think.
Well, that's part of it is like I sometimes go to the place of like, I shouldn't be doing something that's good for me if it's not good for everybody.
Absolutely.
It's like, wait a minute, you can't help other people if you're not doing what's healthy for
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. And I think what I also have come to, and that maybe this will help you too, is like the thing that got me through is like the TV shows I love and like how many times I watched 30 Rock and how many times it's just comfort food. And I'm like, maybe I can give that to somebody else.
100%.
So, but I also like still want to be able to help in more direct ways too. And I'm glad I get to do that.
Absolutely.
So, it's still ongoing and it's still up there and it's Project You Are Okay, like the letters youareokay.org. Mm-hmm. And there's all the social media you can follow and a YouTube channel. And I'm glad it's a resource that exists. And it was a really challenging thing to start. But the thing I got out of it, among many things, is learning how many people felt the same way. And it opened me up because I think 2 years ago I would have never talked about this stuff publicly. But then I sort of realized that there's not only like people interested in hearing about it, but people who relate to it. Mm-hmm. And it's really nice to be able to give somebody the feeling that like Maria Bamford gave me. It's cool. That's good.
I love your the whole expression when you think about it and talk about it. It is very exciting.
I'm very, very proud of it.
As you should be. Please, as you should be. I agree. I think I've said this so many times on the podcast, but like if you're going through a place in your life where you feel broken, boy, is it great to know you're not the only one. I mean, because so much about mental illness for me, and I think sounds like for you and for so many people, is this insistence that your brain is, I don't know, I'm trying to be better friends with my brain. I've been talking about this a lot lately. I had a great conversation with Andy Richter about it on the podcast.
Oh, cool.
Where he was sort of talking about cognitive behavioral therapy and those kinds of things. Because I don't want to get mad at my brain for doing it, because I don't think that helps. But I also don't want to feel like we're so unified that I can't argue with it. I want to be able to be like, cool, cool, cool. I know for some reason you think that telling me that I'm going to die is helpful right now. That's a real holdover from like a version of me that's back in Lucy days where she was going to fall out of a tree and get attacked by a saber-toothed tiger. That's not going to happen to me.
Right.
So let's put that in check. You know what I mean?
Right.
To be able to have those conversations. But just that insistence, that separation from the rest of the world, that insistence of like, this is just you, you're broken, you're a piece of shit, you're crazy. No one gets this, you know, and it's such a tremendous relief when you know, like, and I've even felt that way about things that haven't had anything to do with mental illness, just sorrows about our jobs and feeling rejected or family stuff, going like, oh, wait, everyone has parents who are going to die and that's going to be awful for all of us. And some of us have gone through it and some of us have, like, all of those things, especially as I get older and you accumulate experience. In a perfect world, you're also meeting and interacting with more and more people through your life and collecting those experiences and going like, oh God, we're connected. We're all connected. I'm not by myself, even when I'm by myself. Like, that's a really special feeling.
Well, and also realizing, as we're experiencing right now, that you make more friends by being honest with who you are and about, you have better relationships when you're honest about yourself and the other person can do the same thing. And I think I spent so many years, like through college, just being like, I just have to present this version of myself that doesn't have any of these things. I don't want to talk about the anxiety and I don't want to be that person. And I just, like, for a while, I just wanted to be like the fun, like in college, I was like, I'm going to do the opposite. I'm gonna be the fun person who throws parties and goes out all the time and like always has, like, is just down for whatever. And I was like, that's the version people will like. And then those friends kind of petered out when the party ended. And then I, through You Were Okay and through doing things that like really mattered to me, I started to get these really deep connections with people. And I was like, oh, like, we have these unique shared experiences and you know about it and you like me anyway. And that was powerful.
Absolutely. All right. Let me talk about some crushes here.
Let's get into it.
Tell me how your hormones were reacting to all of this stuff that was going in outside of your body and how, and being alone a lot and how like social structure at school wasn't feeling great to you. Where does like fantasy and crushes, and you said you didn't really date, so where does that all factor in? Were there periods where that felt dormant because there was just too much other shit to manage, or were you having huge crushes on, let me just throw Hugh Laurie out as an example.
How did you know that was exactly what I was going to say? I was literally going to say my big crush was Hugh Laurie in House.
Because he's my big crush also in House.
He's gorgeous. Also as Bertie Wooster.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, no, Jews 100%.
Wooster.
Yeah, big old Hugh Laurie crush to this day.
Yeah, same.
I had crushes on like the weirdest people. My big crushes were Stephen Colbert and Hugh Laurie. And Roger Bart, the Broadway actor.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
God, I think he's done Sketchfest.
Probably.
Yeah, I think he came and did a Celebrity Autobiography, or at least we talked
he's
about it. Or
so talented.
Yeah.
And I just like love his voice. But
I
so
love this.
I had like crushes on like older men.
Me too. And I'm older than you. So like mine were like, these guys know, but it was like Kevin Kline and Steve Martin were my number one crushes as like a 10-year-old. I was obsessed with them.
I had a big crush on Kenneth Branagh in his version of Hamlet in like middle school.
Listen, if he had fuller lips, I would have been right there with you. But for some reason, the lack of lips just could never, I could never cross over. Nice. When he has a beard, it's good.
Hugh Laurie has like a long philtrum. Like this.
Yeah. He does. Yeah. I didn't even know that's what it was called, but you're absolutely right. Yeah, I think thin. I was gonna say thin lip sink ships. Nope. No.
Yep, that's the
phrase. They sink the ships of my passion. I think somewhere along, like, that's why I love them both when they have facial hair, because it sort of completes the picture a little bit more down in the downer face.
The downer face. and Noel Fielding from The Mighty Boosh was a big crush of mine as well.
Have you met any of those guys now, like in what you've done?
But
I know Rich Fulcher, but that's never extended to.
He's crazy.
Amazing.
I haven't. I'm trying to think if I've met. There are definitely people who I was like a huge fan of in high school that I like later got to meet or work with. And I was like, this is the coolest. Well, yeah. Will Wheaton became like a spokesperson for You Are Okay.
Oh, nice.
And
I
was
Will.
The biggest Trekkie.
So that was huge for me.
And like he, at like a Comic-Con panel, like gave me a shout out and I was like, oh my God, Will Wheaton knows my name. Like I knew that, but it was so cool.
It never gets, I don't think that stuff ever gets old.
I think it's just that, the thing of like, I exist. It's that's what that is.
I completely understand.
And also for the show I write for, I've gotten to write for some people who I think are completely hilarious.
And what's the show you write for these guys?
Big Hero 6.
Nice.
But it hasn't come out yet, so I don't know who I get to say is on it.
Yeah.
But,
well, we can safely say Scott's on it.
We can safely say,
He's a very close friend of mine.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, he's so awesome. I haven't met him. Great. I've just seen him on Skype sessions.
Yeah.
Recording
sessions.
We gotta
facilitate it.
Yes, please. This is wonderful. All happening.
Yeah.
I had a big crush on this girl freshman year, and she was in the Gay Straight Alliance, and I didn't think that was even in my purview of like a thing that was something I might ever consider, but I knew.
Were
I
you
wanted
also
to go to
like self-identifying at like when the insanity is going on, it feels also like, oh, that's what defines me. And then it's hard. It's like, okay, I love theater and I'm crazy. Those are my two things.
Yes, those are,
and there's no room for anything else. I can't be a part of this other thing.
I wasn't like sexual because you can't really be if you're when you're going through something like that. Like, that's not the part of you that's forming.
Mm-hmm.
And I think every crush I had was very like chaste, mm-hmm. very just like, I think you're neat and I'm not going to think too much about it. Until senior year, when by senior year, I had been through a lot and I'd come out the other side pretty well. And I got into college like by a mere, like really just like on the basis of my portfolio and one of the people in the administration really liking me.
And what was your portfolio was so like?
It was all, I wrote some very morbid little, I went to Tisch for TV writing and it was all writing samples. And that was the one thing I knew I could do well. And, before my senior year, I went to like a summer program there and I met, the head of the TV department there, Charlie Rubin, and he and I just like hit it off and he's still like my mentor. And, he basically told me like, keep your grades up. Like, I want you here. And I was like, my grades are bullshit. Cause I've been, in and out of the psychiatrist's office for the last couple of years, and he just really believed in me, and that was such a blessing because I don't know what I would have done otherwise. And I wrote a really honest essay about like, here's why there's missing parts from my transcript. So senior year things were a little more normal, and I did Bat Boy, and the guy who played my husband on stage in Bat Boy was this guy named Nate, and I had the biggest fucking crush on him. And I'm sure he knows, because I almost even think I've talked about this on podcast before.
Yeah,
not that he's like aware of me continuing to be a person all the time, but
you never know.
Nate, could you come in here please?
That would
oh, he's just walking in, he's being very silent, just tiptoeing on in.
No, Nate, don't take your shirt off right well. Oh, what do you think? Take it off. Go ahead, take it off.
You aged real well, Nate. Okay, you can go.
thanks Nate.
He's so quiet. That was always one of his sweetie. Big. Yeah, mm-hmm. Nice guy.
So you had a big fucking crush on him.
Big crush on him, and I would cry about it in my car while listening to Let Me Kiss You by the Smiths. And
that's what they're there for.
That's exactly what they're there for. I really related to Morrissey as mm-hmm. a 17-year-old in California.
many do.
Oh, and I don't know how I managed to only have one tattoo of a song lyric from that era of high school, because I've considered so many of them.
What do you have?
How Strange It Is to Be Anything at All from In the Airplane Over the Sea.
I'm glad that you made that very smart decision.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
I felt good about it because huge crush on Stephen Colbert.
Yeah.
I interned at the Colbert Report when I was in college.
I think I knew that.
Oh, okay,
yeah.
Never mind.
Yeah.
So I
well, no, but these guys didn't know.
Oh, sorry. So I interned at the Colbert Report, and he wants a show because I would get to watch the show sort of from backstage, and he would play Holland 1945 by Neutral Milk Hotel, which is from that album. And that was when I was like, okay, it's okay that I like this band because Colbert likes this band.
Sure.
And then I was like, oh, that's like the only cool album I like, and then everything else is just like, oh, have you guys heard the cast recording from the Xanadu original Broadway cast? Well, what about the Xanadont original Broadway cast? It's a real show. Which version of Assassins do you prefer? It was really a big crush on Nate, and I don't remember talking to him or acting on it because he had a girlfriend. I knew that. But I remember my drama teacher even saying to me, like, so Nate, huh? And I was just like, how does she know?
Yeah.
Who is this psychic? Yeah. But like, I wasn't subtle.
Yeah.
Like, I think I didn't know how to be subtle about a crush because I was just like enamored. I don't even remember like if anything happened that spurred it on. I just knew I was like, I get to do this part of the show where he holds my hand and I'm just gonna be living for that part of the show. We didn't get a kiss. I kind of pushed for it though. I do think I even said to my drama teacher, like, there's a part where it feels like it would be natural. I was a late bloomer. I didn't get my first kiss till I was like 20.
How was it?
Good. I didn't tell him it was my first kiss till after, but
that was the right decision.
Yeah, I mean, but like 20 seems like old for it.
I guess I've heard. I mean, that's one thing I've learned about because of the era that I talk about with people on the podcast. It is a very, very wide range, and frequently the people, the super talented, wonderful people that sit on that couch, have very, very late sexual experiences.
I then like hit the ground running. I was like, how much can we do? And sure. How short of a time can we do it in?
Sure.
It was like a...
That's a powerful feeling to let in for the first time. And
once you get the first out of the way, it's kind of like, what else do we check off? Like, cool, I'm in the club now.
Yeah,
sex havers club.
Yeah.
But yeah, high school, like, I don't think there was a conception of me as like a person who could have sex. I think I just knew I had crushes on certain people. And it was the OC was really big when I was in high school. So Adam Brody and Olivia Wilde, who mm-hmm. was like, also being bi was like very cool when I was in high school. But I was like too afraid that might actually be the case to like do that. So I would just like hang out at the Gay Straight Alliance. Like, I'm so straight, but I'm here. Do you want to talk? Like, it was it's funny because like I only came out to my mom, my parents, like a couple years ago. And I think in retrospect, there were all these things where I was like, no, but like, you remember that thing? Like, that was me being like super queer.
Yeah. Well, I would imagine that even if you hadn't. First of all, even if you hadn't gone through everything you did, the way you've described your family sounds like they would probably take that in stride with no problem. But like, also having gone through all this other stuff, like, it's kind of a drop in the bucket to be like, oh, I'm bi. Well, I'm sure they were like,
I think to me, the thing is like, there's part of me that's like, I'm so complicated to sort of raise anyway. I don't want to add anything else. And
but what is, well, I know,
by
I know.
The time I told them I was like a 25-year-old like working and having my own life, I think I just didn't want it to be like another complicating factor or something.
I totally get that. And like, I don't, my sort of defensiveness about that is not fair to parents either, because just because I feel it shouldn't be complicated doesn't mean that it's not complicated for parents.
They are great and they're really I'm super lucky. I have super cool parents. But yeah, it just wasn't. I think the other piece of it, and I don't know how much of this is the case, but SSRIs like really inhibit sex drive, mm-hmm. and like that was something that I didn't quite like realize till I was like older and like sexually active, but I would imagine it played some role.
I'm sure. And that's not good. Yeah. That's like not going to be the, I mean, They're not going to say to a 13-year-old girl, like, the first thing I should warn you about is you may lose your sex drive.
Exactly.
Like, they're not.
Cause I don't think I had it. And then it like sort of didn't.
Yeah.
It didn't change it really.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was sort of like, okay, like I'll just be over here. Like, watching Garth Marenghi's Dark Place. Mm-hmm. Your brain
didn't get gobbled up by hormones in the same way that it did for many people.
No, and then I turned like 21 and it was just like, let's
I bet. I can't believe this, but it has already been almost an hour. I gotta get into this mash game.
Oh shit, we're playing mash? Hell yeah.
We gotta mash this out. So So the first category we're gonna do for your mash is let's just cut right to the chase. Three British shows.
Great.
From any era that you can jump into and just live in that world.
Oh,
you're not recreating plots. You're just like hanging in that world. Three.
Oh, I like that. Okay. So we're going to go with Jeeves and Wooster first. The Edwardian England.
Great.
We're not going to go Blackadder. That sounds terrible to live in any of those eras. Agreed. But we'll definitely go Mighty Boosh.
Great.
And let's see. I'm trying to think of something with some cool. I guess we can go Monty Python because those cool like animated.
Oh yeah, Terry, giant feet.
Yeah,
stepping
exactly.
On people. Yeah. Monty P. Great. Okay. Next category is let's do three skills that you wake up with tomorrow. And they're sort of real life practical skills.
Oh, cool.
That you wake up with tomorrow, like that you've downloaded, your brain is downloaded.
Oh, that's so cool. Would like a great singing voice?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure. Yeah. Great.
Maybe like just super into working out.
Great.
I would love to be like a person who's like day couldn't start without the gym, but
I'll tell you what, I'm not that person either, despite the fact that there is a spin cycle sitting right there that I've not. I feel like so weird outing myself as having had that. I only got this fairly recently. I usually like to ride outside, but then the summer got so hot and I hate hot weather. I'm not the person that's like, I don't think I'm usually like, God, I can't wait to get my bike ride on. Sometimes I am, but it's just aging into always knowing that 10 minutes in, I'm probably going to be really happy that I've done it. You know what I mean? The person who like rises at 5 and is like, God, I can't wait to get on the treadmill. I don't know who that person is.
I tell you what, though.
But it's been great for my mental health. Physical activity has saved me in many ways.
Walking is like the thing I miss the most, which is one of the reasons I'm excited about having a dog now, because like I
get out there with that dog
everywhere in New York. I've been obsessed with reading How I Get It Done from The Cut. It's women like Martha Stewart and like all these like fashion editors. It's like their schedule. It's always like, I wake up and I make an omelet from the chickens in my yard. And I'm like,
Martha Stewart's magazine, I feel like I still have a subscription to, but I feel like I flip through it and the only thing I really read is her calendar, because it makes me laugh so hard and it makes me sick to my stomach and I love it.
It's like I've never like hated and been jealous of something so much at the same time.
And they know when they're like, trim the violets, and then the next day it's like, ride the horse, and then the next day it's like, milk the cow and have a CEO meeting in New York. You're like, how is this happening?
It's like, you're living like Anne of Green Gables, and meanwhile if I'm on a deadline I'm like eating jerky and Red Bull. I don't know if you're familiar with Amanda Chantal Bacon, founder of Moon Juice, which is a L.A. smoothery.
Amazing.
And she wrote out what she eats in a day. And I think I've read this article more than I've read any other. And it's all stuff about how like she eats like I make a delicate broth out of the mushrooms that I've harvested, and I use some purified activated charcoal at one point she's like, my 3-year-old's favorite sushi restaurant, and I'm like,
in the middle of mothering a 3-year-old while she's doing all this.
I'm like, this is
many Christmas.
I have a feeling all these people are leaving out all the assistants who are doing all this stuff.
But I'm 100% positive you're right, and I will continue to tell myself that until the day I drop dead.
Yes, but the last skill I would love to have.
Oh, I totally forgot where we were. Sorry.
Working in animation, I'm very jealous of people who can draw.
Oh,
I would love to be able
to
draw. I'm like, first of all, I'm constantly hanging around the storyboard artists like, hey, you guys want to put me in?
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be funny if you just drew me in? But like, I it's so cool. I wish I could draw. I really can't.
Me too. Same. Okay. Next category is 3 foods that in this world are maybe not great for you, or you're allergic, or you know, listen, you want to be able to eat it in perpetuity, but you would probably get sick after a certain point. I want you to know that's not going to happen in this universe.
Oh, man.
And it could be also the obscure thing that you had one time that you're like, why have I never been able to recreate that?
Yeah.
That can also be an element to it. Like, snap of your fingers, there it is in perpetuity.
Well, right now I'm on this like pretty strict diet, so this actually is like
any food. This is for your fantasy life.
I'm allergic to blueberries, and I would love blueberry pancakes. Great. I have missed those. I just want a big old thing of fries, like McDonald's fries.
Yeah.
I've just wanted that the past couple
days. That's what this is for, right here.
And
get it all out.
God, what's terrible for me that I want? It's so funny because I can barely think about it because all I've had is like broccoli and like a chicken breast.
Okay, I get it.
You know what? I want to try that cookie dough ice cream place.
Oh, sure.
They just serve you like a big thing of cookie dough. It's like cookie dough.
Great. Great, great, great. Okay, let's do alternate universe, sexy times, companion, husband, wife, however you want to think about it. And it can be different for each person. But 3, I'm happy to put Hugh Laurie on there for you.
Yeah. This is in a world where I'm like just, I'm like single and have all the.
Yeah.
Okay.
Endless possibilities.
Oh, like the 3 biggest crushes. Kate McKinnon.
Great.
And Michael B. Jordan.
Great.
Yeah. I like a spread.
You like a spread?
I like a spread, yeah.
It's great. No, listen, you really covered it. This is fantastic. Really covered it.
I like to cover my bases.
It's fantastic. Okay, next category for you is three... now I'm going to stretch your improv legs a little bit on this one. Three musicals.
Great.
Never before made.
Right.
You wrote them.
I wrote
about
them.
Whatever.
Okay. The first one's called... Don't Call It a Horse.
Okay.
And... it's shockingly good. It's very experimental. It's about it's a western mm-hmm. musical.
Oh, I love this.
Yeah,
okay.
It's a western themed musical about a town that doesn't have any horses, and they got to dress up their other animals so that when the sheriff comes by, they have enough horses.
Great.
Okay.
Because God knows what'll happen to them if they don't have enough.
They'll
horses.
Shut down the town.
They'll shut it down.
The next
Don't Call It a Horse. I love it.
Is let's see. I would love to do a musical about the life of L. Ron Hubbard. So maybe it's called...
Yeah, that's brilliant. Of course.
Maybe it's called L. Ron.
Or like the Admiral or whatever. Whatever he made people call him.
Yeah,
was it that or was it the Admiral?
It was the Admiral.
Okay.
And the best thing in this entire universe is Andy Daly on Dead Authors Podcast. The two-part...
so good.
I've listened to that so many times. It's the funniest thing in the entire world. So that would be one of my musicals.
Brilliant.
And then the last one is called Sure Is. They're all and it's a Clueless ripoff. It's not the Clueless musical.
Sure. Sure.
And it's like very it's in that vein.
Yeah. That's great.
And it's at the Theater under St. Mark's every third Tuesday.
Wonderful. Yeah. Wonderful.
Okay. Those are my musicals.
Sure Is. I love it. That's very satisfying for me. I'm very happy right now. Okay. Next category is three places you could have a vacation home. And they can be fictitious places. It could be like next door to Hogwarts or, you know, the Middle Earth area.
Right.
Anything like that.
West Village. I just want a West Village brownstone.
Yeah, no kidding.
It's so bougie, but it's all I want.
It's very bougie, but I have to say, it really does. Like when you're walking around in New York, you feel like you walk through an imaginary magical gateway where suddenly things are calm. I don't know how they've managed to achieve that all this time, but fuck if it ain't true.
I don't know, man.
When you walk, you're like, you know you're in the West Village when suddenly your blood pressure slows and you're like,
there's like ivy.
Oh, I feel very relaxed and privileged right now. What is happening? Like, I feel great right now.
I want to buy my dog a sweater.
I can't stop myself.
If only there was a store on every corner.
Oh, good thing there is. Yeah.
Like, that's, like, I want that so much.
I get it.
But it's... it's a level of financial capacity that
I can't even comprehend it in a way, you know?
You have to have been on coke in the 80s to achieve.
That's
like,
right.
It's not something
that's
I
right.
think you can do.
Or your
now.
Parent, it's your parents'
or
brownstone.
Your parent.
Or
yeah,
your
exactly.
Brownstone.
Or it was like, oh no, it's rent controlled. I pay like $7.50 a month.
Yeah.
Like, fuck
Bastards.
You. Die and leave it to me.
Yeah. West
so
Village,
that's
great.
Definitely one of the places. Positano, Italy is one of the other places. It's the most beautiful place I've ever been.
Is it on the coast?
It is. It's on the Amalfi coast.
Positano sounds like... is that the place from Enchanted April?
I don't know
what
that is.
Is it close? You should see that movie.
Okay.
Because there's a bunch of great people in it. I mean, just for you being kind of an Anglophile in terms of like people like this... like when this movie came out, I'm sure I was in high school. And it's... it was all people I'd never heard of before, but it was like Jim Broadbent, Miranda Richardson, Alfred Molina, Joan Plowright, and it's Polly Walker, I think.
Polly Shore?
Polly Shore was not in it. Polly Shore was great. He was like the busboy who, and it's about, God, I want to say it's Positano that they go to, something very similar to that. It's like drab... it's a period piece, so it's like in the sort of maybe like the 20s or something. And you know who else is in it? She's so great. She was on Whose Line? You know who I'm talking
I do
about.
Know who
the
you're
brunette,
talking about. Yes,
very funny. Josie something. It's definitely Josie.
Yes, and I don't know what
she
her
is
last
in
name
it,
is. I know who you mean.
And she's the star, basically. But it's like, and it's drab, bad weather, England, like has a Merchant Ivory kind of feel to it. She suddenly gets a wild hair and is like, I want to rent this villa in Italy. And she gets these other two women to agree to do it. And so these fussy, fuddy-duddy, like, British women go to this Italian coast, and it's just them sort of unfurling.
Oh, I love
and then
that.
Their husbands show up. Oh, it's charming. It was a real, like...
They're like, stop being so silly.
They're like... It's just lovely. It's very female. Like, it feels very, I'm sure, a woman, maybe not, but I feel like probably a woman directed. But it was, for me, that was one of those like comfort food movies where, like, if I was really depressed or anxious, I could watch it. And
let's
be like,
watch it while just a little bit high.
Yeah, great. That's great. We'll feel so safe. It's
yeah,
great.
It'll be the safest.
That's great. Okay, so Positano, Italy.
The Panda Preserve.
Oh, wonderful.
I love pandas. And if I had like a dream trip I could take, I would want to go to the Chengdu Panda Preserve in China.
Yeah, great.
Hold a panda.
Great. Listen, it could happen. At least via MASH.
I believe that.
At the very least via MASH. Now let's do three alternate universe buddies.
Yeah.
Living or
like
Dead.
Friends?
Or yeah.
Yeah.
Living or Dead. It could be a character from something, okay. Not necessarily the actor who does it, or, you know, a character from a book, anything like a superhero, anything like that. Three that would be awesome to just hang out
Leslie
with.
Leslie Nope. Because I think she'd just be the best friend.
Great, great, great.
And right now, my biggest friend crush is probably Michaela Cole, who does that show Chewing Gum.
I haven't seen it.
Oh, it's amazing. It's on Netflix. It's a British comedy. She's so phenomenal.
I got to make a note to myself to watch that.
You'll love it. She's
sometimes things
so
just
talented.
Disappear from Netflix.
It's
like,
weird.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
where it's
I
not
do.
Being recommended to me, even though I feel like it should based on other things. And somehow you don't like it. Just it's not. I'm not seeing it as a scroll, but it appeared and then now it's gone
right.
From my queue, like from my Netflix world.
Maybe David Bowie.
Great, great, great.
Yeah,
great.
I love David Bowie.
Rightly so, man. Rightly so. Okay, and then last category. It's gonna be tough. Let's do the wherever you live now, there is a sort of like a Harry Potter-esque room of requirement where it doesn't invade your space and universe. It's like you're walking into this sort of alternate dimension, and there's a room in your house that you can walk into that can be anything. It can be totally magical. It can be very practical, but you have this extra room that three different purposes.
Oh, okay, great. First one is movie theater.
Great.
Second one is...
Please say holodeck. Please say holodeck.
Oh, I didn't know holodeck was an option. That could be anything all the time.
That's why I suggest it. And I only suggest it because I know that you liked TNG.
Yes. Oh, obviously. But then that could be a movie theater too, right?
Well, that's true. But if you don't get holodeck, at least you'll have covered your territory over here with
and
movie
then
theater.
And the last one,
category.
You know what I want? I want just like a Pinterest room that I can just take Instagrams in and make my life look really good.
Great. The old Pinterest room. Great. Okay. You know, I got to do my little squiggle
yes.
so that we figure
so
out your number.
Yeah.
So you
so
just
I say
tell
stop
me. Yeah.
Do,
you
right.
just tell me when to stop.
And stop.
Okay. Great. I'm going to pause this.
Okay.
Do some very important calculations.
Mm-hmm.
Come back with your 100% guaranteed
I'm so excited.
MASH future.
This is huge.
It is kind of huge.
Okay.
All right. Listen, I feel great about this
I'm
now.
Really excited.
I do want to tear this Band-Aid
okay.
off. Which is a part of me wilted when I had to cross out Hugh Laurie. I'm so sorry. But never fear, because you ended up with Jeeves and Wooster. So you
Hell
didn't
yeah.
really not
okay,
have you do
great.
Still have him. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
You have the character of him.
Right.
You have the character of him. So you not only get I feel you not only got him, but you also got Kate McKinnon. And it couldn't have
oh
gone the other way.
God.
Do you know what I mean? It couldn't have
yes.
gone the other way around.
And we can go hang out with Bertie Wooster, who would have been a bad partner. Like,
that's right.
He's the worst version of him, of Hugh Laurie to date.
to date. It's true.
Yeah.
But you know what? Use him.
Yeah.
Fuck that guy.
Yeah. You know
literally.
What? Go over
use
and
him.
Just like he's
make him
not
have
smart.
Passionate love with
yeah.
you.
He's not that smart. And
you can feed him lines of other Hugh Laurie characters.
Right.
Now say this. Now look. Now diagnose me.
It's not lupus.
I know I came up with three other illnesses that it was over the course of the show, but now right at the end, I'm finally sure that it is lupus. Okay. I want you to rest assured that you can also visit... you can take Kate with you or anyone to your vacation home smack dab in the Panda Preserve.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
It's in
amazing.
The world
it's
of
the most magical.
Jeeves and Wooster though. Still. But the panda preserve is there, right?
No, no, it's different. It's a totally separate thing.
Oh, I didn't realize.
You can visit, you can jump into the world.
Oh, okay, cool.
But aside from that, you also have a vacation home in the panda preserve.
I was thinking it was a lot more of a thing of like all the people in Jesus Wants to being like, well, what are these strange black and white creatures from China?
You don't have to cross over any of these categories unless you want to. Okay, that's what great. I have to say right now. For example, nobody else but you can enjoy your holodeck if you want to.
Yes.
Yeah.
The holodeck's becoming
that's
a Pinterest
infinite
room.
Wishes. That's yeah. infinite wishes. I loved your musical about L. Ron Hubbard, and I know it was a smashing success. We should write that.
We should write.
Actually, there's a demand
that
for that.
Great. I 100% know that.
There's a demand for that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think
someone
Andy
probably
Daly playing L. Ron Hubbard yeah. in a musical would be the.
It would be the shit.
The greatest thing that's
I couldn't
ever
agree
happened.
More.
It's just and there's just like a whole act at sea.
Yeah, someone is already on this. But we'll do a better one.
We
think we might have to. What have I not told you about that's wonderful? You're an amazing illustrator.
Oh, that's so good to hear.
I like to imagine you sketching the pandas.
Yeah.
I want you to feel very confident that when you are doing all these various things, having a great time, some of which probably you will bring your BFF Leslie Knope along for.
Hell yeah. She'll love it.
You have a limitless supply of delicious, salty Mickey D's fries.
Oh, that sounds really good.
And it's, oh, sorry. And then you're, oh, I just realized I forgot Mash's Mansion Apartment Jackhouse. Weirdly, of an apartment in the Panda Reserve.
You know, that's okay.
It's like a treehouse.
It's like a, yeah. It basically.
It's like their lower unit is theirs on the ground. Right. And then you have the upper unit,
there's
which
like
is
like a panda
house.
Landlord who comes by
yeah.
and just.
Who wears
like,
he's like, oh, he's in his bathrobe again. Does he ever
right.
get dressed?
Like, oh, this guy. Come on. I told you, I'll have the rent that yeah. I'm making from my career as an illustrator slash musical writer.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Wow, Jenny,
that's really
what
beautiful.
A roller coaster. That makes it sound like there were bads. There's no bads. It was a roller coaster of just exciting, just the thrills.
Right. It was
no
like
chills?
A roller coaster that only
I
goes
get
up.
Chills.
Yep.
I don't know why I'm not willing to abandon the metaphor. I'm not willing to abandon
keep
the roller coaster, even though
like
in every way I've backed out of it.
Only goes up, so it's a roller coaster you're on forever.
Forever. How horrible! You're trapped on a roller coaster
oh, that's
forever.
My nightmare.
It's my worst fear.
I hate roller coasters.
Me too.
But I love watching videos of first-person ride-throughs on roller coasters.
Oh, yeah. I like those, too. And also anything at Disneyland except for I haven't done the one that loops Mickey's face.
Yeah,
and but like everything that's on the other side
well,
that
Disney
I grew up
like
going
my,
to. So super
I
safe.
I got the perks on Disney.
Cause, oh, shit.
Yeah, I know.
Uh-oh.
That's the... The yeah. working for Disney part.
God, I gotta get on that. Thank you so much. Okay, listen.
Thank you. Yes.
Really quick, please tell everyone about the IFC show
yes,
because
so.
that was the principal reason
all
that we
right.
got that we that's the reason we met in the first place anyway. And I want everyone to watch it.
I created and star in a show called Neurotica that is currently you can see on IFC.com or also it's on Facebook.
Great.
You can watch it on Facebook. It's called Neurotica, which is like neuroses. Plus erotica, which is more or less my mid to late 20s, and it's fun. I play a dominatrix with OCD and a pluck in her step who's trying to save her mom and pop dungeon from the mega dungeon moving in next door.
Great.
So if you like You've Got Mail and getting hit, you'll love Neurotica. You can find me on Twitter at Jenny Jaffe. And you can find Project You Are Okay at projectyouareokay.org.
Guys, you got a lot of homework to do, and I'm talking about the best kind of homework, so get on it now. I look forward to hearing your feedback.
Thank you very
thank
much.
You. Thank you. Thank you, guys. Thank you guys so much. Thank you for joining us on the podcast.
Thank you.
Thank
I'm so
you.
Sorry. This, I hope this
no,
was okay.
This is fine. This is really fine. As always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.